A former drug dealer who spent half his life in prison says gangs are a scourge and must be outlawed. Legislation giving the police more power to seize illegal firearms and assets from gang members was rejected by Parliament last night, the same day as two gang-related shootings in Wairoa. One of them, a children's bedroom window, was destroyed by a shotgun blast. Rotorua-based Bill McFarlane once ran a large methamphetamine operation in the Bay of Plenty, for which he was jailed in maximum security prison for 14 years following earlier incarcerations. Now he runs a residential rehabilitation program for ex-offenders called Pū Whakamua. But gang members are not welcome in the program, and he says he's turned down hundreds of them. Last month, the Police Minister, Porto Williams, told Parliament there are nearly 7,700 gang members on the Police National Gang List, an increase of 2,300 in 5 years. Department of Corrections figures show that as of late February, there were around 2,700 gang-affiliated prisoners. Billy McFarlane says he's worried that gang numbers are growing, and in Rotorua, there have been gang skirmishes, even in primary schools, between children of gang families. He says no one is calling it out, and he's had enough. Billy, tēnā koe. Welcome.
Tēnā koe. Me mihi ana ki a koe o te rā ki a koutou hoki ngā kai whakarunga e whakarunga ana i tēnei wā ngā mihi.
Kia ora. What's your particular concern at what's been happening?
I don't have a particular concern. The whole thing concerns me. I suppose we've got to have a look at the gang numbers have doubled in the last 6 years. Are they going to double again in the next 6 years, or are they going to triple or quadruple? I think the rate that things are going, if we don't deal with the problem now, the problem we're going to have to deal with in another 5 years is going to be twice as hard to deal with. So in Rotorua in particular, we've got some stuff going on here. I know I'm dealing with gang stuff at the primary schools. I've been dealing with gang stuff at the intermediate schools and also now dealing with gang stuff at the high schools, eh? Our whānau are shooting each other in the streets. And I know when I looked at all the gang activity that's going on in the country in the last month, I was appalled. It's not getting any better. And we've got people in the police that are saying we should do this and others in the police that are saying we shouldn't do this. We've got people in Parliament saying we should do this and others saying that we shouldn't do it. Like, I suppose the first thing we need to do is make our minds up whether we're going to do something about it or not. Because, you know, talk is cheap, and we can't keep talking about the problem. We have to put some action in behind their talk.
Can you give us a little bit more of an idea of what's going on? We know we've seen the emergence of new gangs, not the long-established traditional gangs in New Zealand. We know we've seen the sort of common sharers, the more Australian-style gangs who have a different co-opera, if I can put it that way. So can you speak first about the rise in numbers, and is that simply a result of some of Australia's decision-making and a lot of people coming here and just being, you know, essentially dumped here without support? Is that a driving factor for the numbers, or are there other things going on?
No, I don't believe that that's a driving factor behind the numbers. That's an excuse, in my opinion, for what's going on. It's easy to blame the influx of 501s that are coming to the country for the problems that are going on, but most of the gangs have just decided to number up now.
Why?
If you strengthen your gang, you're gonna have more power. So we know that the 501s have made a difference somewhat, but the amount of them that have come back here is minimal. Their influence has not been that great, but if we take them out of the equation, it's not going to solve the problems with the other gangs.
What's at the heart of the power battle, apart from staunch? Is it also is it turf battles over drugs or what?
Sometimes, but like we also keep blaming the gangs for the drug problem. And, you know, they may be – some gang members are not doing drugs or dealing drugs, like, and some gangs won't allow that stuff to happen around them. But you know, a lot of the people that are driving the drug stuff are not even gang members. Some of them are businessmen. Some of them are people that are sitting in high places that are organising these big drug organisations. So we're just using the gangs as a blame thing for that. I think poverty is a big driver for a lot of this gang stuff. We've got a lot of our gang members that are living in poverty and just want to try and catch up. You know, there's a myriad of problems that is causing it. And if we keep if we keep poking the stick at one part and saying, oh, it's the drugs and all that are doing it, we're still not going to fix the problem up. Because it's not the drugs that are driving our young kids in school to be fighting that belong to different gangs. It's the culture of the gangs that's doing that.
Being what? Are you saying that is actually being encouraged intergenerationally within the gangs?
Yeah. They're getting gang-coloured tickets put on them when they're born. The other day I watched a man walking his child to school with his gang colours on, holding his child's hand in the same colours as his gang, walking off to school, a little girl that was probably only 6 years old. And it was so sad for me just to think, oh, man, there's just no hope. There they are, taking them up, marching them up to school with their gang colours on. Like, you know, when are we going to get to the point where we say that it's not acceptable anymore?
No, I beg your pardon. I was going to say, Billy, can we be clear? You've never come from the gang background, as I understand it. You've never been a member of a gang, correct? So these are observations that you are making. And this whole issue of that we hear that it's often about this being whānau, right? Or that it's being a place of belonging. Or that for someone who is in poverty or is a bit lost or has had a hell of a hard time in their youth, there is a brotherhood here. As someone who's not been inside, how do you come at what this is about? And do you agree with any of those assessments?
Yeah, if we wind the clock right back to the times of colonisation and we have a look when our people in the land, the land confiscations, when you take people who are tangata whenua and you take everything off them and you take their land off them too and you disenfranchise them, you push them into a poverty space. Māori people have become tenants on their own land. So, you know, if you do that, if you switch things around and you get all the rich people now to become poor and you let all the poor people be rich, the rich people that we call good people, they're going to start doing the things that the poor people were doing too. So if we wind back the clock and we look at what's going on there, that is poverty that exists against Māori and Pacific Islanders due to the confiscation of their land and other things. So it can start there. That we can also talk about the urban drift, which caused our people to go away from their marae and move into these state homes, where they actually got lost their sense of identity. So they don't know, they're brought up not really knowing who they are, being called Māori but not practicing Māori values. So this has been an ongoing series of problems for Māori and Pacific Islanders actually at this stage now too, where we've got lost identity or no identity or mistaken identity, where a lot of them think that they're American gangsters now. We've also got the poor influence of adults in these children's lives, adults that were growing up in that gang space that really never knew any different either because their parents put those colours on them when they were in a cot. So there's a lot of stuff we've got to undo here. And we've got to offer some other opportunities because we know that the opportunity that's on sale right now is jail. Well, you know, if you're a potential or prospecting gang member and you go to prison, you're just going to fall right into your space where you're just going to really get closer to your gang, not further away from it.
Let's come at what we do, Billy, because the police have said, and it's Hawke's Bay Police actually, I know you're going to talk a lot about your experience in the Rotorua, parts of the Bay of Plenty, but we've talked to Hawke's Bay where there's been, a really significant issue arising not only in Wairoa but in Napier in particular and in Hastings. And the police there just said, we cannot arrest our way out of this. And for a long time, the police have been moving towards this idea that there's a difference between drug addiction and the whānau and drug supply and drug trafficking. And they've kind of been trying to do this approach of separating people from gangs where possible. I don't know how successful you see that as being. But what is it?
I've never seen that happening. I've never seen that happening at all. And like, if there's a difference between drug addiction and people that are selling or dealing drugs, why are they all still getting the same penalty? Why are we still incarcerating them if they've got an addiction instead of treating them differently? Why doesn't it come under the health sector? Like, you know, they're not separating the gangs in prison. They're putting all the ones in the same gang in the same unit. So that's not separating them at all. But that's just letting them breed in there and grab everyone else that's coming in to join their gang too. But the prisons are not managed. If we start at the schools aren't managing it. The schools are still letting gang members walk on the school property with their colours on. So the schools are not managing any of the stuff that's going on with the different coloured fights that are going on at school. The schools just don't know how to manage it. I'm seeing that firsthand here. So the schools are not managing it properly. The prisons are not managing it properly. The police are not managing it properly. And the government's not managing it properly. So we're going to sit down and keep having talks again for the next 10 years while the problem doubles, or is somebody going to make a choice on it? I'm not even a national supporter. I support Labour because of the kindness that comes out of our Prime Minister. But you know what? I support national stand on doing something about it, on their stand on law and order.
So what is it,
Billy? Call it what it is.
What do you make illegal?
Well, make illegal for them to be wearing their colours in public for a start. You know, if they're wearing their colours in public, take them off them and burn them. You know, like you got to start somewhere. You know, what about all these poor people that never came from gang families or never been engaged in gang stuff before, and they've got to see these men walking downtown all coloured up? What happens to the poor girl that's had or the poor man that's had an incident with that certain patch and traumatised for life and got to walk down the streets just to go to the dairy and have to have those patches come push back in their faces again to revisit their trauma? Like, why are we allowing it to happen? You know, why are we escorting all these gangs to go to all of these hui and all that, instead of like saying you just can't travel like that in numbers? You know, they're traveling in numbers on the street, and now they're causing problems with the public. But they've got a police escort. You know what I mean? Like, why are we sort of just sitting there saying, oh, it's okay because they're family members? Even we've got our own Māori people accepting that it's okay to bring those patches onto our marae now. That disgusts me. There's no, you know, there's a reason why we won't take gang members on Pūwhakamua. It's because of the strength of the gang culture. You know, we don't do Christianity on Pūwhakamua because of the strength of Christianity culture. Our Christianity has moved onto our marae now, and it's changing our tikanga. And now we've got gangs moving on to our marae and changing our tikanga too. So when do the iwi leaders stand up and say those things are forbidden here? These are our last bastions for our culture. We have to protect what we've got here, instead of saying, oh, it's okay for them to do that because they affiliate to this marae. So we can't stop their affiliation to the marae, but we can stop them from bringing stuff in that smashes our culture. You know, our culture has been so damaged these days that our people actually believe that we're warriors. You know what I mean? For 30,000 years, our ancestors never ever laid a hand on a woman or child or another man, and all of a sudden, we got these things that, oh, Māori have got a warrior gene. So these are the things, for me, it's our culture, our Māori culture, that's going to influence our people in the right direction and teach them what their true identity is. And then finally, they should be able to find their own way to around treatment of each other, treatment of their children, treatment of their communities. Like, why don't we give these men some opportunities to engage in our culture? Why aren't some of the programs that are focused on these people have a kaupapa Māori focus instead of just a kaupapa Māori name? Like, we brought lots of gang members onto Pūwhakamua, and I've worked with lots of them in prison too. When I set up a unit in Kohuora in Auckland South, the first thing was, let's go and talk to the gang leaders, because they're going to have the biggest influence inside the prison. I sat with 8 gang leaders in their prison, and it was a unanimous decision for them all to accept our culture because they all wanted change. These are gang leaders that were willing to influence the men under them. They wanted some cultural information to help them live their lives better. So we know that it works. I know that our culture works with all the men that I work with. Why, with all this money that the government's going to throw at everybody, are they going to speak to Māori and speak to Māori leaders and Māori program providers around how we can bring these men in and treat them like human beings? Like, I doubt whether that's really going to happen. It's just we're going to have a talk fest about this problem, and in 5 more years' time, we're going to be sitting here saying, wow, now there's 15,000 active gang members in the country.
You won't include active gang members in the program. You said you've turned away hundreds. The missing link for me is, how an outlaw or a ban on gang patches or a gang on a ban on gang presence, visible presence in various areas, gets enforced by the police, and how we avoid getting into kind of a gang war situation involving the police. Like, how is there a transition? If you actually legislate for something, you've got to enforce it. We've seen the limitations of the police ability to do that just recently at Parliament. So explain to me how you would see that working.
Well, I think that's for the police to decide how that's going to work. But if we don't do it now, how are we going to do it in 5 more years when the gang presence has doubled? Are we going to have the gangs running the country shortly? Like, you know, the police have got to do something about it. Bring in the army. I don't know. Like, you've got to take control. We can't let all the gang members around the country start controlling what's going on in our public space. You know, we have a responsibility to the public. That we have a responsibility to keep them safe. So, you know, in Australia, they've outlawed them. They're not allowed to wear their patches out on the street. You know, do something about it. Make a difference now before it's too late.
Billy,
I'm happy to work with as many as I could work with. Mm. You know, we're not getting much support from anybody. Other people will work with them too. Like, but let's give them the opportunities first to see whether they work or not. We currently don't have any opportunities for active gang members to engage in anything different. Let's try something.
Tell me what you do, because you've been recognised by the parole board, by police, by corrections. Tell me, the first rule is what? You cannot be an active gang member to be on our program. Just explain.
No, the first rule is you need to be ready for change. That's the first rule for us. We're not in the process of telling people to change their lives. We're just here. We're the door that's open for people that are ready to change their lives. Active gang participation is only one of our policies. And one of our other policies is that you must be ready to engage in kaupapa and tikanga Māori full time. So we know that our culture is based on love and kindness. For some reason, we're told our culture is based on, we see a taiaha all the time, we see a haka all the time, we see all this stuff. We're not actually promoting the good values of tikanga Māori, which is about looking after each and every one of ourselves, looking after our communities, looking after our children, promoting kindness. Those values need to be promoted. We need to teach Māori how to be Māori. It's hard to do that when everything Māori is getting taken away from us. So we just make one of the rules is that we won't take active gang members. And the reason for that is because of the strength of the gang culture. It's not about the gang member. You know, it's not the gang members that I'm poking a stick at here. It's the culture of gangs. It's the institution of gangs. So we see these men and we say to them that you have to be ready for change. You have to be ready to embrace our culture, and you have to be ready to put down that other culture that is affecting your life. So we won't take active Christians either. And this is not a bang on Christians either, by the way. Christians, there's lots of nice people in the churches, but their stuff, I just want to see them separate their stuff for the church and our stuff for the marae. When they come to the marae, be a Māori. When you go to church, be a Christian. At the moment, it's when you go to the marae, be a Christian. When you go anywhere, be a so. And it's the same with the gang stuff. We ask the gang members, put your gang culture down so that you can get a real positive, deep look at Māori culture. Otherwise, the culture of the gangs affects the beliefs on this side in our Māori culture. So that's what it's about. It's about human beings can be multicultural and have lots of different cultures. We want them to embrace our Māori culture firstly so that it doesn't get a watered-down view and it doesn't cause them to be what we call rangirua, of two minds about what they're trying to learn. If they embrace their culture properly and then they decide to go back to the gang, I believe that when they go back to the gang, they're going to go back to the gang situation or with their gang friends as a positive influencer. So the men are only at Pūwhakamua for often a year, sometimes 2 years. We teach them to be culturally competent so that when they go back to their families, they can influence good behaviour. If we could get every gang member to be influenced by good behaviour and learn how to behave properly, then the colours would become irrelevant. Because, you know, it's not the gang colours or the gang people that are the problem or that we're looking at. What we're looking at that's causing the problem right now is the behaviour. So our tikanga Māori is all based around behaviour. That's what our tikanga was put in place for. To teach us how to behave properly. At the moment, a lot of these men are not behaving properly, and for a lot of them, they don't know the difference. Some don't know what's right or wrong. Some only know what they're teaching, what they're learning, and some only know what they've been taught. So we have to start a process of retraining a lot of these men. But let's work with the ones that are ready first. Not all gang members are ready for change, but I'll tell you what, there's a whole lot of them that are.
Billy, can you talk to me also about, it was really concerning hearing earlier what's happening in the schools and younger. And you're also doing some work with at-risk younger children, right? At-risk or children perhaps of gang members. Or what's the youth program that you're running, please?
No, we're not running a youth program yet. We're still trying to start that up this year.
Oh, okay.
The problems I'm seeing in the schools are directly related to my own son.
Okay.
I've been called in there. What they've got gang, prospecting gang members coming to the school looking for my son. We've got young men in the school wearing different coloured hats and different coloured stuff and getting being influenced by their gang parents. We've got stuff going on outside of school at the movies and all this sort of stuff. And it's these young gangs of boys. You know, we know in South Auckland there's over 50 street gangs. So this is not predominantly the main gangs that we know of in New Zealand. These are other gangs that are starting up too. The culture's bubbling underneath as well. You know, there's over 80 gangs in New Zealand. A lot of them that people don't even know anything about. So we're counting the problem at a lower level, I believe. 7,500 active gang members, I don't believe that.
Are you getting anywhere with the likes of corrections, not only for access, but also to make more possible?
Well, it not so much with corrections, but with Serco, of all things. People go, oh, but Serco's at this, but Serco's got an awesome leader at the moment. Their prison director has allowed me to go in there and have these conversations with the gangs. And, you know, my experience working with gang members too is that they can change. We're getting a high percentage of the men that we work with with tikanga Māori actually changing the way they think. We've had them put their patches down after three wānanga. You know what I mean? We've had them stepping away from the gang. A lot of them just don't know what they don't know. Like the prison's a breeding ground for gang recruitment. So, you know, if we're going to be putting them in certain places in the prison, let's give them some opportunities while we're there. While they're locked up, let's use the opportunities to try and make them come out of there better people than what they were when they went in. And out in our communities, let's talk to these gangs and let's offer something else instead of going, oh, we have to bloody, you know, I believe that we have to outlaw their presence on the streets. We have to get the patches off the street just for the well-being of others. But if you take the patches off the street and you outlaw them and all that sort of stuff, it's not going to solve the problem. You're just not going to see the problem that often. It's going to bubble up from underneath. So we've got to try and fix the problem, eh?
Ngā mihi, Billy. Thanks very, very much. Billy McFarlane and the program that he runs for ex-offenders, residential rehabilitation program, is called Pū Whakamua. You can see more. You can get a link on the webpage if you want to learn more about the work that he is doing.